Yesterday, we mentioned the question from Rav Chaim Sefer Olah Parsha, why is chewing its cud a sign of a kosher animal? So if you remember, we discussed the whole concept of Tamei HaMitzvos, and I said to you that in the name of the Beis HaLevi, that we don't investigate Tamei HaMitzvos in order to do mitzvos better. So that would mean that there's like a problem with our relationship with mitzvos, yeah? We need, really? Come on, you do it better because you understand it? You're serving yourself or serving Hashem? So really, the reason why we investigate the reasons behind mitzvos, Tamei HaMitzvos, is because the Rambam says that it's part of Talmud Torah. It's a very subtle distinction, but when you think about it for a minute, it makes a lot of sense, and you sort of like begin to like feel bad that you're not, you know, whatever. But it's the way we are. We do things better when we understand them, but it does reflect a certain problem in our avodas Hashem. Okay, but listen, we all have what to do. There's growth. There's always room to grow. But that's how the Beis HaLevi explains the Shita of the Rambam, is that Tamei HaMitzvos are supposed to be part of Talmud Torah. They're not supposed to be there to help motivate us to do mitzvos. But I think it's a fact anyway. But so yesterday, Reb Chaim's answer was that the idea behind, what do they call it? Not regurgitation. What do they call it? Yeah, it's a whole fancy word. Rumination, I think they call it. Ruminants. Anyway, is that there's a new level of nutrition every time that it comes back up and gets processed again. And the same thing with Torah. Same thing with Torah. That you learn something once, you get a certain amount of nutrition from it. But the more you learn it, the more you see. And in fact, Chazal even referred to Torah as nursing from one's mother. That the baby sucks and more milk always comes out and then just keeps coming and there's new flavors and I don't know how the baby knows flavors. Anyway, so he points out something else here. It's very interesting. I'll read you the little story. When someone would come to the Vilna Gaon waiting to be accepted into the select group of his Talmidim, the Gaon would instruct him to prepare by learning a specific page of Gemara. When the boy would return, he would say, so he completed it. And the Gaon would say, he's not ready to test him yet. He should go back and review it. And he basically made him do this a bunch of times. And this was the test. A student who began to show impatience or disinterest in going over the same thing again. So that was, you know, not for our group. But if a person was willing to go over it, and every time he went over it, he saw something new, he's excited to go over it again. So that was the person that was accepted into the inner circle. I was thinking about this morning. I was listening to a shmooze from Rabbi Kallis. And he was talking about Reb Chaim because the shir that he was given was, he gives the shir to the Agudah on Hilchos Shabbos for now. And once on Wednesdays. And so it's recorded and posted on Torah Anytime. So he wanted to discuss Reb Chaim's shitos about various issues in Hilchos Shabbos. So he went through a lot of topics that they learned and then said, oh, he had asked the shayla to Reb Chaim and sent this Reb Chaim, and Reb Chaim's response is all these different shaylas. It happens to be very interesting, you know, because it was all psak, like ice cubes. Chazon Ish allowed ice cubes on Shabbos. You know? Like, it was like very interesting stuff. So it got me thinking because I prepare for shiurim a lot. And I know about myself that when I have to prepare for a shiur, I'm pretty laser focused, especially as it gets time for the shiur, it gets closer. And it becomes a lot easier to learn because there's like an intensity that comes with the fact that, you know, there's a test tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like it's a different intensity in your learning. You're much more focused. Yeah, everyone can relate to this.
Right.
But you know, okay, and sometimes if you learn something, sometimes it happens to be interesting, and you know, you get interested in the topic. But let's say you're learning like Daf Yomi. Let's say you're learning, you know, or you're doing Chazara. You know, we go to the base medrash after we learn it. Okay, everybody, you know, do Chazara. It's not so easy to get motivated. Yeah? Yeah? Agree? When we go to base medrash after we go through it, we say, okay, go do Chazara. It's like, it's not always so easy to get motivated. Reb Chaim was learning Kol HaTorah Kula every year. Right, he had his cycle that he would cover everything every year. So he had to cover a certain amount every day. And there was no test. He wasn't answering a shayla. Are you with me on this? How do you do that? How do you go over a Gemara for the millionth time?
Determination.
It's really, it's like unfathomable. You know, like when you go over something that you've done so many times, it's just like, I'd rather do something else today. How many times have you been in this situation where you feel like you've been learning this sugya or you've been doing whatever it is, so many times you're like, I'm ready to go on to the next topic. You know what I mean? But he was casting over it again and over again. And it wasn't to produce a safer... This is what Rabbi Kallis is pointing out, is that he has various svarim on different topics. And one of them is called Derech Chachma, which has to do with Karbanos, Kachin, whatever. And he stopped producing volume. He didn't finish it, basically. And so he was talking to one of the grandsons about it, and one of the grandsons pointed out that he had made a decision not to do it because it takes a certain amount of time. And that time, he decided, was better dedicated to all the people that were coming to speak to him than to produce a sefer. So that meant that all of his learning was just, was what? Where is it all going? So the answer is, what do you mean? That's the Mitzvah Talmud Torah. And it was intense. You can watch the video, right? Nothing else was going on around him. There was so much going on around him, but nothing else was going on around him. he has a laser focus on what he's learning. I don't know. Do you understand like what I'm saying? Like, is this coming across? Like, he was learning because that's Avodas Hashem. Learning. That's Avodas Hashem. Are you taking notes because you're producing something? No. So then, like, where is the goal here? No, that's the goal. The goal is I'm connecting through Borsha, I'm learning, and this is awesome. So I don't know if this is coming across what I'm trying to say, but it's an unbelievable lesson to see the Gadol Hador do that. When you see like a Baal Tshuva do that, so you know, okay, he's getting into it because he's never seen it before. Yeah? But when you see Rav Shechter, go take a look one day, and you watch Rav Shechter learn the Gemara. Do you think Rav Shechter doesn't know the Gemara? And he's sitting there, and he's going over it, you know? And sometimes he's writing things, sometimes he's not. Unbelievable. The idea that we can sit and we can learn something again and again and again. And so that's the idea of chewing cud. That's what he mentions over here. When Rav Chaim Volozhiner, yeah, who is one of, he's considered to be the main Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, yeah? So when he first came to the Vilna Gaon, he complained that despite having learned a certain Masechta 17 times, he still didn't feel that he had acquired it. What?
He learned it 17 times
and he was upset. He didn't feel like it was like, you know how you get into your car and you go and you realize you drove to the wrong place because you weren't paying attention and that's where your car goes? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Gemara is like that. If you learn it enough times, like, you know where everything is because you learned it, you know, so many times. It's like, it's just, that's it, you know? The tira. That Rashi is over here, you know? Anything's like that. You do enough times. You get it. Because he learned it 17 times, but he doesn't feel that way yet. So the Vilna Gaon said to him, after only 17 times of review, expect to know it that well? So he's like, okay. So like how many times until I get there? There's no set amount, said the Gaon. Your entire life must be consumed with reviewing over and over and over again. Wow. There are times, however, when a lazy person is to be sought out. This is the opposite of lazy, right? But there is times when a lazy person is the best man for the job. It's a pasuk in Mishlei. K'chomeitz l'shinayim. Okay, ashamayinayim. Like vinegar for the teeth and smoke for the eyes. Keno atzel l'shalchav. That is like a lazy person for the person that's sending him to do something. What's smoke and vinegar? Why smoke and vinegar? So Rav Chaim said, generally speaking, vinegar is not something that tastes very good on your teeth. The wine is geweldig and geschmack, but when it turns to vinegar, it's like irritating. Smoke irritates your eyes. But, sometimes it works the opposite, because sometimes you can have vinegar that you rinse your mouth with when there's something like, you know, it's in your mouth, you need a rinse. Vinegar is very effective at cleaning out your mouth. Similarly, smoke has its advantageous aspects as well. This is why a lazy person is compared specifically to these things. When the mission on which you are sending him is a positive task comparable to healthy teeth and eyes, then he's not going to be good. It's not going to go well. But sometimes, when the task you need to carry out is a negative one, you should specifically choose a lazy man. Because in the course of his delays, you might find an alternative resolution. And you'll be glad that he never fulfilled his mission. I'll give you an example, he says. Has anybody heard of a get given by a kohen?
No.
It's folded up.
Very good, you've heard of it.
Yeah.
So there's a whole process Where if a Kohen gives his wife a get, he's supposed to write it, fold it, you know, sign, you know, stitch it up, and then sign it. And it's a whole thing. Eat him, sign it. It's like a whole thing. Why? Why?
Make it harder to maybe make him think more when you're doing it.
That's right. Because if he divorces his wife, he cannot remarry her, as opposed to Israel, who can. So we try to delay it.
I heard a story. I think it was at the Rav Chaim Kanievsky, that some guy that was like divorced, that was like supposed to be a Kohen, divorced his wife because she would get him kids, and then she had kids right after. So he wanted to remarry her. So like he went to Rav Chaim, and Rav Chaim asked him, "Are you sure you're a Kohen?" So he went and asked his dad, and it turns out he was adopted.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, crazy. Someone messed up his dad not telling his adopted because he had his most important things his whole life.
That was my exact question. Why did
we gotta,
No, Jada, I had the exact same question. Why did his dad just tell him he had his adopted?
Okay.
I forgot what riot was, but one of the riots uses real human skeletons as part of the prop.
I heard about this. I don't know if it's true anymore.
Yeah,
I did hear about
this.
Yeah,
it's true.
You can look it up. There's articles about
this. Yeah, and so I've been there a couple times.
Really?
You should look into it.
Real human bones?
Yeah.
No, but didn't they put them away or something?
How
did
they get
No, I think
bones?
They say, take a look. You look it up.
I'm
going to
look it up right now.
Where did they get the bones from?
People.
What people?
Old pirates of the Caribbean.
Instead of donating your body to science,
they donated to Walt Disney.
Isn't he? He's in a freezer somewhere, no?
Yeah, he's in a freezer.
Who's in a freezer?
Frozen in carbonite.
And also, it's not so.
He's a real Star Wars fan.
He's not a freezer. He's buried.
He's literally people.
No,
You know why Disney made the movie Frozen? So when you Google Disney Frozen, that comes up, not him in a freezer.
Okay, moving right along.
No, Rabbi. Oh, you.
So
there's no more.
Oh, you see?
There's no more.
Yeah, but you were there before that.
Yes, sir.
Really important this year.
Okay, so velocitamuvemimaysembam. Don't make yourselves tamei with all of this non-kosher stuff. Okay, now, you remember what Reb Chaim tells people about beards? Remember any of the stories? Very often, Reb Chaim would tell a guy that comes to him and says, "I'm having trouble getting married." He tells him, "Grow a beard."
Yeah.
Right? Remember the guy didn't listen and never got married. Another guy listened after a while, and then Reb Matzisyahu Solomon told him, "Reb Chaim is a holy man." And he got the hint, and he grew his beard out, and his the second girl he went out with after that, it's a true story. It wasn't a true story with the first girl. It's a true story. So it was the second girl he went out with, he married. So you know that... That smells so good. So you know that Reb Chaim...
always the second girl that you with.
That's a true story. No!
All right, so fine. I'll go out with the first girl, someone that I don't think.
So, well, you're growing your beard. It's very good.
Can you think that was a breakup?
So,
you want to stop?
No. So, you know that Reb Chaim was married. Somebody told me that Reb Chaim was more makbid to tell this to people that lived in America than people in Eretz Yisrael. I don't know if that's true. Yeah, someone told me that. I don't know if it's true. Mm-hmm. It is true. You know that for a fact. So he felt that it's very important, especially if a person lives in America, to distinguish yourself as a Yid. Because there's so many ways that we assimilate in one way or another. It's very important. Very important. Anyway, so listen, that's the background to the story, yeah? Because everyone remembers when Reb Chaim tells people about growing a beard. A certain Baal Teshuva had grown a beard, which greatly upset his in-laws, who are non-observant Jews that happened to be living in South Africa. He decided to offer them a deal. Listen to this. If you kosher your kitchen, I'll shave off my beard. Oh, no? This is a good way to get your mother-in-law to hate you. Okay, so they replied that they weren't ready to go that far. But, if he'll shave his beard, so they'll start buying kosher meat. What do you say? Come on, what do you say?
I would trim my beard first.
Yeah? So what's the problem with what they're saying?
Because they're going to cook it.
They're going to cook it anyway. Very good. Yeah. I'm going to cook it anyway. So what's the point? So the young man turned to Reb Chaim to ask his advice. After all, if they were continuing to use their old kitchenware, it's all going to be treif anyway. So what would be the, should he really trim off his beard for that? Okay, let's take a vote. What do you guys think Reb Chaim said?
No.
Yes.
Said no? Yes?
I think he said yes.
You think he said yes?
It's a step toward in the right direction.
Reb Chaim told him that eating kosher meat in and of itself is a step in the right direction. I quote, step in the right direction. And would lessen the Isurim they were violating, even if their kitchen was still not fully kosher. Just FYI, right? Just FYI. Let's think this through. You need a Talmud Chacham to think this through. Because the truth of the matter is, a Stam Kli, a Stam Pat, is generally, has not been used within 24 hours. Most of the time. Midya Raisa.
Most
of the time. Midya Raisa, if you cook in that pot, it's not treif. Right? Because there's no same time with gosh. The flavor comes out of the pot that's been sitting there for 24 hours, that flavor, and it's not a good flavor anymore. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So, I'm just pointing it out to you. So, it's not so simple that it's going to treif everything up, certainly not on a deraisa level. So, okay, anyway. He therefore advised him to take the deal and remove his beard. They write in parentheses, in a permissible fashion, obviously. But that's interesting, no? Can I point something out while we're here? This is the same Reb Chaim that keeps telling people to grow beards.
Nice.
It's very important to realize that. So, one of my mispalim went to Reb Chaim, and you know what he said to him?
Grow a beard.
Mm-hmm. Where's your beard? And he told him, my wife doesn't like it. So I said, okay.
But what about growing long hair?
In other words, it's not a fanaticism. I just want you to understand, it's not a fanaticism. It's that there's an Indian of the beard, and shavers are you know, the shaylas about shavers. So like it's an Indian, but it's not like it's an iser daraisa to use a shaver and these kinds of things. So there's room to be mako, but should be a reason for it. Ah, so here's a reason. He's gonna get somebody to keep kosher on some level. Someone asked Rechaim, what's the cause of the current gzeros aimed at drafting yeshiva students into the army? Rechaim replied that everything is mita keneged mita. Chazal tell us that the gezeros that prevented the Jews from doing the temple service before Chanukah was a result of their prior laxity in the avodah. If you're not doing the avodah, I'll take it away. Similarly, before
how is it a
gezeros? What?
How is it a gezeros to draft people into army?
Meaning that it's taking a lot of boys that might have been learning in yeshiva and putting them in, at least risking them in certain situations in the army.
How that gezeros? Like it ties to everybody.
Meaning, no, they're saying there in the sense that there's like a battle waging in Eretz Yisrael between what you call the Haredi and the more secular.
There's like a mitzvah to protect them, so like not like the
Gentiles. No, but it, that, I mean, this is a very complicated topic. But the point is that it's a complicated topic. It's worth the discussion, but it's a complicated topic.
Or in their case, it's worth it to like.
Rav Chaim Oizer Grzesinski commented that the World War II, there were a bunch of gzeros that were made against kosher slaughter, particularly in Poland. And Rav Chaim Oizer said, based on his knowledge, that they weren't so careful about shechit over there.
Thank you so much.
They weren't so careful. Here too, concluded Reb Chaim, the gzera must have been precipitated by the failure of yeshiva students to diligently apply themselves to their studies, and that's why guys that could be in yeshiva or should be in yeshiva are at risk of being taken away from yeshiva. They'll be learning less. They'll be, you know, doing other things. So, what's the point? The point is that every time we are lax in a particular mitzvah, we run a risk. And like I mentioned to you, I forgot if it was yesterday or 2 days ago, whatever it was, the concept of mida, can I get mida? Remember what I said? Pop quiz. Does anybody remember what nuance I said in mida, can I get mida? I said hey, there's a point here that is often missed in it. Let's see if everybody remembers.
What?
I remember it can't actually be mida, can I get mida, because
that would work. It's not that Hashem is just like upset and just responds in kind, but rather the mida, can I get mida is... Yeah, who said that? An educational tool. Because it shows the person that it's coming towards what he did wrong. Yeah? So that's very important. That when something happens to us, what Hashem wants from us is to look at what happened and say, oh, what did I do to deserve this? In other words, to look into ourselves and say, well, there's a mida keneged mida. Richard Joel. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's the idea over here, that if there is a gzeira against shechita, so then we need to be focused on whether or not we're eating carefully. Are we being careful with shechita? Are we being careful with it? A Magen Shir once came to ask Reb Chaim advice about one of his students. The boy had been a good and diligent student, but after coming back from Bein Hazmanim, he he found himself like just not chopping the shir. Yeah? So kid was very good, very good yeshiva, very good boy. Was chopping things out of problem. Vacation, benismanim, comes back to yeshiva and suddenly like push it. He's not chopping. He's not grasping the shir. Nothing seemed to help, and he couldn't figure out what could have happened. Reb Chaim said, it's likely he consumed some prohibited food, since that is known to diminish one's capability to comprehend the Torah. This is what we were talking about before. Yeah, that was the look. No, different look? That when it comes to non-kosher food, it's metamtem es halev. So a non-kosher food, for example, when you're talking about like children and things like that, this is, like, becomes a big issue. Because children have no mitzvos. They're putter. So they also don't have averos. So you're not allowed to do things mitzad you. You're not allowed to feed them non-kosher food. But let's say the children go ahead and they get some, do you have to like take it away? Like, what's the big deal? They're not doing an avera. So generally speaking, let's say you have a little kid, and a little kid crawls over to one of these things on Shabbos and turns it on and starts making noise, you know? It's muksa for us. And it's an avera to do it. But the kid did it on their own. Like, what do you want from me?
Well, what if, like, you know when a child starts eating solid food, he still sometimes wants milk after a meal?
Right.
He eats, let's say you just ate chicken, you gave him chicken or burger.
Right, you know, so when he's of the age of chinuch, you have to educate him, but he's not even of the age of chinuch.
You're going to tell a 2-year-old you can't have bottle milk right now, you got to wait 3 hours?
Yeah. Right, so you got to, you know, you got to figure these things out. So, but the point is, let's say that you have something that really isn't kosher. That was the shayla that I was asked. The shayla that somebody sent over to me the other day was that they have a kid, and the kid has a lot of digestive issues, and there are certain kosher alternatives. I couldn't find any. I don't know, whatever the story was. So there's a Western website says, you know, but at the end of the day, because of some cheshbon, this, that, and the other thing, even though there's pig enzymes in this, but, you know, ask your rabbi kind of thing, you know. So I didn't want to get involved in the details, because the bottom line is that it could be that this is exactly true and on target, but at the same time, we really want to be careful what our children eat specifically. Because when it comes to a mindset, a behavior, so they're not doing anything wrong because they don't have mitzvos, right? So it's no avera, right? Now, if they're old enough to be educated, if they're educated.
What's old enough? Like, what age is that?
When they're aware of Shabbat, it depends on the kid and the issue. Two things. Depends on the kid and the issue. If he's aware of what it means Hashem created the world and what it means Shabbat on some level, then it's time for chinuch. If he's not, then he's not. So, but that's all when it comes to mice and behaviors. But when it comes to what he ingests in food has the potential to be metamtem es halev. It stops up our mind. So you have to be very careful. As Reb Chaim said, maybe he ate something usher. Even if his home is pious and takes great care with the kashrus of their food, it's possible he ate something that wasn't properly tithed. What's tithed mean? Trumas and maestris. In Eretz Yisrael, you have the issue of trumas and maestris. So even if the food was kosher, maybe truma, maybe something wasn't taken, maestris weren't taken, maybe, I don't know. He should accept upon himself to take greater care to eat only kosher food, and Hashem Yazor, he'll be able to understand once again. And I assume kachava. A 90-year-old man once came to me, Reb Chaim related, and told me the following story. As a young boy, he had traveled away to learn in yeshiva, and as was customary in those days, he was given an older bachur to tutor him, and ensured he was able to keep up. When his father came to visit the yeshiva to check up on him, his tutor marveled at his clarity and grasp of the material and predicted that if he continued at this rate, he would become a great Talmud Chacham. After returning to yeshiva from a yontif break, however, he found himself completely unable to understand things. Everything, like all of a sudden, boom, like in the other story, right? Couldn't comprehend things. Anyway, so he didn't become that Talmud Chacham. He just didn't. He didn't go on that. He just didn't keep going. He married, raised a family. They were, you know, Talmud Chachamim. But to this day, he himself couldn't learn. A crazy thing. One day, he was reading some Sefer Yushalayim Shalmala, and he read that a similar story occurred to a student of Rabbi Akiva Eiger. And his Rebbe told him he must have inadvertently eaten forbidden foods. The old man, after all these years, was stunned and suddenly recalled that on that fateful Yom Tov, he had been given a treat by his neighbor. And he began licking it. When his father saw that he was eating, however, the father got all upset, and he threw the rest of it in the garbage. It seems that the neighbor was less careful with kashrus, and he felt that that was the problem, that he never became the Talmud Chacham he could have been. This man came to ask my advice, said Reb Chaim, but what could I tell him? It's so long ago. I suggested that perhaps he should fast for a single day to atone for his transgression and daven to Hashem to return the ability to learn the Holy Torah to him. Wow, this happened even in Muncie. There was a certain neighborhood, and they found out that the butcher, all the chicken, So it happened in some neighborhood in Yerushalayim, apparently, where such a thing happened. And so it was an issue of the salting or whatever. Something had happened. The chickens were not kosher. So the people who were very concerned about this and said, does that mean that they now have in their system this timtum aleph? Right? It wasn't their fault, that's the thing. In other words, if you have a situation where a person, did something.
If you go to a home and the wife says the food is kosher, isn't it still your fault even if it's not?
Oh, so that's the Sha'ilah. So they want to know if they're going to suffer Timtum Alev since they tried everything they could. Mm-hmm. If a person's negligent, should have been more careful. But what am I supposed to do? It had a shkacha, I tried.
I heard an even worse story where the guy gave non-kosher meat intentionally. He hit it. It was horse meat.
In Muncie, there was a situation.
Yeah,
but in that case, birth control for men. I don't know how it works.
Ethan, let's test it on the floor pad.
General rule. General rule. Never, never go on birth control in any way, shape, or form without asking a shayla.
Noted.
Never.
You just made birth control for men.
Always ask a shayla. Always ask a shayla.
I'm serious.
Now,
birth control for men.
Now, if there was a way that they could have known and they were not being careful. Oh, no. And they weren't being careful enough. So then they hold a certain responsibility. But, Reb Chaim said in this case, it was not their fault at all. They were anusim, and there is a debate among the poskim whether it is timtum alev in a case of oines. So, it's not necessarily a problem. They have in the brackets over here that in his Sefer Orchus Yosher, by the way, there's apparently a WhatsApp group that is now trying to go through Reb Chaim's Sefer Musar Olchus Yosher. So I don't know if you want to get involved in this chat, but I'm doing Chinuch, Mirtz Hashem. Ches.
This
is the YU thing. This is the YU thing.
Okay, they just started.
Yeah, so maybe Kedai to get it. It's his Musar Sefer. He goes through Aleph Beis in different topics, and he has certain angles that he felt were practical for our generation. Anyway, in Olchus Yosher, Perkei Gimel, so he does seem to think that it's Timtum Alev either way, even in the case of Ones. But just FYI. A group of Bachrim was once brought to meet and get a bracha from Reb Chaim. Properly impressed, they lined up, and each one had his chance to look into the Gadol Hador's kindly eyes and receive his customary bracha v'atzlacha. I guess it was before Buha. One by one, they passed before him, felt the warmth and love he exudes so powerfully. One boy, however, was surprised. Reb Chaim basically didn't look at him. Can you imagine being a group of these boys and you're one of the boys and everyone's saying bracha v'atzlacha, bracha v'atzlacha, and this kind of just skips over you and goes to the next boy? It's humiliating. What in the world? What's wrong with me? Am I not here?
It's like the rubbies handing out.
Oh my gosh.
The next guy goes
Anyway, thinking it was a mistake, the boy went to the end of the line. And he came back a second time. And guess what? Reb Chaim just ignored him. Crazy. Confused and hurt, the boy pulled his Rebbe aside and said, he's skipping me. So the Rebbe went back into Reb Chaim and respectfully said, the Rebbe seems to have skipped one of the boys. With his face set into lines of concern and dismay, Reb Chaim murmured, how can I bless someone who is unconcerned with Basar Bechala? What? What? Shocked. The Rebbe went back out, pulled the boy aside, and told him what Reb Chaim said. To his bewilderment, the boy started crying and said, for the last few months, after eating meat, He wasn't waiting 6 hours before having milk.
He was waiting 3 hours. I'm telling you already.
Whatever. He was violating his minute. He was a violation of his minute.
What was Shayan?
He violated his minute. He immediately resolved that he would now be careful about waiting the time, you know, carefully. His Rebbe brought him back to Shulchan, who now warmly blessed the child as he had all the boys. Now the Rebbe waited. The Rebbe waited. The boys went out. And he said, come on, Rabbi. How did you know that? Come on, Rabbi. How did you know that? How did you know that? I'm going to read you what it says here. With his customary humility, Rechaim replied, it's not Nevuah. You know, I don't have Ruach HaKodesh. It's a simple observation. I could see the image of a goat standing out strongly on the boy's forehead.
Interesting.
And Chazal tell us that one who sins with Basar V'Chalav has the image of a goat on his forehead. Has anyone here ever seen a goat on someone's forehead?
On someone's what?
Forehead.
Maybe.
You have.
Maybe.
Like at a zoo, he fell over and a goat. Whatever.
I can't tell you where.
Anyway, Ruchai was trying to downplay, but the Arizal writes that while each sin causes a corresponding image to appear on a person's face, only the truly righteous have the ability to discern these images in order to enable them to advise people on how to correct their ways. While he was eating breakfast, Ruchaim's grandson was told of the following interesting story. There was a certain Jew who took significant care to interact with the outside world as little as possible. To this end, he kept his money in a lockbox in his home so that he would avoid going to the bank. Pudge, you didn't want to... I don't know, you don't want to go to the bank. You don't want to see the... I don't know, whatever. But he would be exposed to all kinds of other things. One time, however, he found himself no choice. He had to go to a bank for whatever reason. When he presented his credentials to the teller glanced at his name and did a double take. Did you go to Gateshead? He says, yeah. So surprise me. Why do you ask? The teller's entire demeanor changed. You should know, he said, voice quivering with emotion, that every Erev Yom Kippur, as I say, Tefillah Zaka, and forgive anyone who wronged me, I think of you and find myself unable to forgive you. When I was a young bacher, I arrived in Gateshead to learn. On my first day, I went to the dining room, and I sat down in an empty seat. You were older than me, and you turned to me and said, you shouldn't sit here. This area is reserved for the older bacher.
That guy's very...
I was so hurt that I carry the pain and embarrassment in my heart until this day, and I'm not mochel you.
I think that guy has a severe problem.
That's style.
The man immediately began to beg for forgiveness to try to appease the teller. After seeing how remorseful he was, the teller finally found he was able to let go of that long festered hurt, and he told the man that he was moichel him. When the man got home shaken, he told his wife what happened. She too was shocked by the story, so she divorced him. No, I'm kidding. And wanted to bring a home-baked cake to the teller to, like, you know, to try to make shalom and ensure that he felt respected, erasing the shame of long ago. So the next day, you know, she baked the cake. The next day, she went to the bank and asked for the teller by his name. You ready for this? The receptionist didn't know who she was talking about, sent her to the manager's office. The manager confirmed that nobody by that name works there. But he was here yesterday, she said. Ah, yesterday I was shorthanded. I requested from the central office they send me some extra help from other branches. I guess he was one of the guys that came here yesterday.
That teller has severe problems if he can't forgive something small like that.
No, but do you hear what happened over here? The guy never went to the bank. He never went to the bank. He kept his money in a lockbox in his house because he was concerned for, like, whatever, okay. So he was, mom's trying to be a tzaddik. But he didn't have a choice, so one day he had to go to the bank. Punk that day, who's at the bank? Because they were short staffed, so he had to get somebody from somewhere else, and that happens to be the teller that he goes to, and they meet up right then so that the kapara and the mechila can come about. That's crazy. That's not hashkacha. Nothing is. You know what I mean? I was in Eretz Yisrael. Because my family, we went on a trip one time, and I wanted to meet up with one of my special rebbeim, Rabbi Ilan Siegel Shlita, and I really was hoping to get together with him, but I haven't had a chance yet to reach out and work it out. Yeah? He, at the time, was the menahel of Afike Torah. Yeah? So my wife and I decided we're going to go to dinner. So we went to one of Cafe Rimon. Did they close it or something?
Is it closed?
Yeah. We went to eat on Friday. I don't remember when it was. I remember what night it was. And so we went to eat, and we asked for the check. You know, and he's taking forever. I'm like, this is crazy. We'll see. We need a longer waiting for check than it took to eat. Finally, they bring us the check. We pay, and we head down to, what do you call the bottom over there? Kikar Tsion. What? Anyway, who's that? What's going on there? The van with the nanas on top. Yeah? The nanas. The Prince Liver guys dancing on the top of the van, you know? Yeah, so they're all there. So my wife and I are like, you know, OMG, you know? And who walks in front of me? You're single. I'm like, Rebbe? He's like, in his South African accent, you're done? Like, what in the world are you doing here? That happened to be the first time that whole year that they went to, like, you know, to Ben Yehuda to make sure none of the girls were there. Yeah? Yeah? And it happens, and we got stuck waiting for the check. You know what I'm saying? This is how Eretz Yisrael goes. This is like Ba'isim B'chol Yom in Eretz Yisrael. Things don't happen in the United States. They don't happen. This is not the same Hashkacha. So that's what this guy did. Unbelievable. Reb Chaim expressed his enjoyment of the story. Hashkacha Pratis. And then he mused, when I was a Talmud in Yeshiva in Petach Tikva, there were also places reserved for older Bachrim. And all, you know, grading system. In fact, we once discussed whether two tables could join together as a Zimun. Because they... Not with you. Unbelievable. There was one older Bachar who sat on the bench near me and took care never to say a single word to me. Because I was younger than him, whatever. He took care never to speak. Years later, he became a collector. And he came to me, asked for a donation. Apparently by then, it had become acceptable for him to talk to me because he needed money. That's what Chaim said. Anyway, there's a lot of stories, you know, a lot of stories about kashrus and tintum alei.
One day you'll be successful, a lot of people that, you know, fully do something
that wrong. We'll come back. Who knows? Anyway, but bottom line for today, that's Jesus Parish. Jesus Parish is all about kashrus. And one of the important things to remember is that nobody, Chas V'Shalom, wants to have a goat in their forehead. You don't want a goat in your forehead?
Yeah.
Don't get a goat on your forehead, because if you do, Reb Chaim's going to see it. No, Reb Chaim's not alive anymore, but hopefully there's still people that can do this and still are on such a madriga. If not, we should be on such a madriga. We should learn. And remember, learning isn't always about results. It's easier to learn when you're learning it going for a result. But remember, Reb Chaim's learned, because that's what it's a Hashem. That's learning. And the Yisachazer, Reb Chaim Elajin, 17 times. Not enough? 17 times not enough? He chazer your whole life and learn. Torah is like that, chewing cud. Always more. And Tzimtzum Halev. Gotta be careful what you eat.
Don't marry a guy.
Tzimtzum Halev. Right, that's it. Leads to mixed dancing.